You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
To put it simply, we're both theater nerds.
So let's pull back the curtain and get a glimpse at the artist's process while creating their art.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming, Cheers. Leo.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
What are we all drinking?
So we're drinking mimosas and Bloody Marys because it's a beautiful Saturday afternoon.
It wouldn't be a proper weekend without me having a Bloody Mary.
There you go.
We stuck with mimosas because we're weak.
You'll learn this over time. You'll start to have it over time.
Sure.
Yeah, that's good.
So thank you so much for coming on this podcast. We're so excited and happy to have you.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I think this is awesome. I love podcasts.
And I've known you for a few years now, just I'm very excited to sit down and pick your brain on several things. So
you ask me anything.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Let's jump right in then.
Deal.
So we were kind of talking about this a little bit before we started recording.
Yeah.
But we're really interested to know what you consider yourself in the industry.
Yeah. You know, I've always, I think, forever and always, I mean, now I've been doing this professionally a long time, known that there have been multiple areas of the arts that I'm interested and active in. So certainly when I first got to New York, it was all about my stage work as an actor, which I still love. I got to just complete School of Rock on Broadway a couple months ago, which was awesome. But I also am a voiceover artist, and I also am an owner and director of MTCA, which is Musical Theater College Auditions, which helps get high school kids into musical theater and acting audition-based programs. So I feel like I walk the path of many interests within the arts, and all of those hats that I wear, they help each other. So I never feel like I'm one without the other two. I always try to find, you know, the balance, which is really hard.
And how they all help each other.
And they all help each other. Yeah. So like, I don't sit back when I'm working with students and go, well, when I was performing, you know, I know the same fragility and fear and competitiveness they're facing, just on a different level as a professional. But, you know, that stuff doesn't go away. So I think they get a sense that, you know, I talk the talk and walk the walk.
So how did you get, I guess, introduced to MTCA? Like, how did that begin?
Yeah, that started, it's been like 12 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a big part of my life now for a while. One of my best friends, Telly Leung, was a part of the team, kind of helping out as a song coach, and was auditing mock audition days. And Ellen Letrick, who's the founder of MTCA, asked me to be a part of one of those mock audition days as a guest coach, as a guest, you know, auditing the day to give notes. And I fell in love. I never looked back. I mean, after that day, I was so fueled by these teenagers. And they're so, you know, there's something special about a 16, 17-year-old. They're really hungry because everything's ahead of them. They're not jaded in any kind of way like the professionals can get. But they were amazing. And I sensed that and really wanted to help them. I loved how positive and energetic they were, passionate about their future. And because I was grateful to get to, you know, be in an excellent college, Carnegie Mellon. I was a musical theater major there. It really was, it set the foundation to where I am today as an artist, that I'm very passionate about training. So to know that I could, you know, pass that along and kind of, you know, lead students to pursuing their dreams was very exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you said you went to Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah.
So after high school, you knew that you wanted to be an actor away?
Oh, yeah.
So you went right in musical theater, right?
Yeah, right into it. Yep. I knew that this was my path. I mean, we would sit around the high school cafeteria. And I remember one day everybody said, like, I'm going to major in communications. Everyone would go, oh, my God, that's amazing for you. I'm going to major in business. And people would apply.
Oh God,
they got
so much money.
Right. Exactly. And they got to me and they didn't even let me answer. They went, we know, Leo, you're going to do musical theater. We know. And I was like, well, is it that obvious? You know, and they said, yeah.
And you did it successfully.
Yeah, I did. I have. I've always been active in the arts. I haven't had to, you know, do the side job, day job. I've been very thankful for it.
Yeah. So after you finished college, what was your next step?
The first gig, surprisingly, was an international job. I came right to New York. I didn't waste any time. I didn't even do summer stock that year. I said, no, I have to drive to New York. It was 6.5 hours away. Even when I didn't have my own apartment, I was sleeping on a mattress in a sublet. And I booked 42nd Street in Moscow, Russia.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy, right? And I did that for about 4 or 5 months. I was understudying Billy Lawler, took over the lead. And then, yeah, that was my first gig. So I was tap dancing in Moscow.
And do you think that your training prepared you for that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, you know what was funny? A lot of people were against, not a lot, but some people questioned the decision that right out of graduating and showcase, and I got an agent, thankfully, why would you leave, Leo? Like, you can't leave. You need to stay and make your connections well. And I thought, well, but what about the connections I make when I'm doing the gig? Like, yeah, I get that it's in Russia and I'm probably not coming back to work in Russia, but to me, it was a no-brainer. And I was young. I was 22, I think, 23. So, you know, I would appreciate it more now than I did then. But when you're young, that's the time to do it, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, but Carnegie Mellon definitely gave me the confidence to go into it. I'll tell you another thing I learned as a professional on that gig was that when I first booked the gig, it was kind of a lowball offer financially, and I didn't want to do it for what they offered. And I talked it over with my father and my agent, and I asked for a lot more money for what I felt was worth it for me, and they said yes. So I learned at a very young age, don't be afraid to ask for what you feel you're worth for a gig. And I was ready. I remember my agent said at the time, are you prepared to hear no, and that means we walk away from the gig? And I said, yeah, I'm okay with that. And that didn't happen. So I also learned at a young age my professional voice in having a voice and being able to ask for what I want.
Yeah, so you had the guidance from your father and your agent. Do you think that that's other performers going through that same thing that you went through of negotiating? Is that,
yeah,
like, if they don't have that, like, how do they learn that?
It's really hard. You mean to how to negotiate on your own?
Yeah, because I feel like I don't. I mean, well, you know what you can do? A BFA program. Yeah. I'm not a performer, so yeah. I don't know if that's like taught.
Totally not. No, at least to me.
This is a little bit of an issue that I have. I mean, it's hard because, of course, schools have all of the educational classes they're trying to teach you. In senior year, it's the last thing. But these business of the business classes, sometimes they're missing the components of something as basic as, if you don't have an agent, how do you negotiate? I mean, that is something. That's a skill set. You know, negotiations are all about, you know, the specificity in what you ask, how you ask it. Someone could pounce on vulnerability or indecision in your voice. Would it be okay if I, like, those are bad words. Like, you got to be able to ask straightforward and not be afraid to ask for what you need. Obviously, the answer, the power of no is the best hand you have because you can walk. You just have to be ready for them to say, okay, bye, I'll go get someone else. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I think if you don't have an agent helping you, just start basic. Just write down the three things that are most important. And then probably, I mean, I never had to do it on my own, but don't over embellish. Don't get emotional. It's not personal, it's business. So it's not about, they don't need to hear about things that aren't of their concern.
Yeah, I also heard that from like my standpoint when I was going through an interviewing for jobs out of college.
Yeah.
To never accept the first offer. And I'm wondering if that's, do you find that that's a similar?
There are times there are times where I get an offer and I'm so surprised by it that like, I don't think there's anything to ask for, but that is far and few between. I mean, and I think a lot of times they know that there's going to be a negotiation. You have an agency, they're used to this.
Well, because I feel like a lot of people, like especially people that just finish undergrad and they go right out into the business, they just want to work.
Yeah.
And so I think that in itself, if they just take those offers right off the bat, it's devaluing the whole community of actors.
I don't agree with the advice of you're automatically young, so you take whatever comes
your
way. I will say, though, that the flip side is when you're really young, you don't quite have the leverage yet to be saying no to a lot of jobs. I mean, yes, if they don't meet certain criteria or if there's responsibilities you have on the show that you don't want to do, you know, or it's taking you far away and you're not receiving A, B, C, D, by all means. But there is something to say for when you're young, you've got to hustle. You've got to be going after a lot of those jobs. But if it's not a job that presents enough gains, why are you there? Yeah, you have to honor that you do have, you know, something to say. It's about finding the right place to get to do it.
Because I think that's like a responsibility as a singular actor to the whole community,
right?
Because I mean, we just heard with all the Equity Lab all that kind of stuff, you know, if people took those jobs, then it would be setting the bar that they can be treated that way or paid that
that's
sort
right.
of wage.
Yep, that's right. And especially once you get into being in the union, I was fortunate to get my equity card after my freshman year of college, so I did go into my professional career having it. But if I didn't have it, I would have been prepared to understand, why do you value a union? What is it that a union does for you? This is another place where in schools, it's not always... I think teenagers don't want to listen to it really and absorb it until it pertains to them, mm-hmm. and they're faced with the job to then. But it's important because you got to know. I mean, there's so much protection, but there's also so much power in you know, staying together and sticking as one too. Yeah.
So you've done a variety of work, I would say, which is mind-blowing to me.
No, thank you.
I mean, just like, how do you have the hours in the day to complete these things?
I know. Well, it's hard. I mean, like, it is always a negotiation with yourself. It's a shuffle. Mm. You're shuffling all of these different areas of your life. And I don't know if it's also the Libra in me that's like the balancing scale. I'm such a balancing scale that if one of them or two of the three are getting a lot more attention, the other thing in me goes, well, what about over there? Like, you haven't done that in a while. You got to go do that. So that's how I know I'm still hungry to try to be doing all three. Because if I'm ignoring one of the three, I get upset with myself. And the older you get, I'm older than both of you, I know. But the older you get, you also start to realize the other things in life. And that's been a beautiful thing, but also surprising to me, like how much time I'm putting into travel now. I've gotten on like two huge international trips within like under a year. And I value like my family and trying to date more, like things that in my 20s, absolutely not. Like, no go. I was in a full relationship with show business. There was no time booking flights to vacation. There was no, like, I would date maybe on the side or have a boyfriend, maybe, but like, no. Basically, it was show business. Leo, you're an actor. You have to put everything into it. So, yeah, I mean, so like, yes, now I do try to always find the balance, but I if I had a nickel for every time I said if there were only more hours in the day, like I do say that a lot.
Well, what would you say is the most fulfilling to you as an artist? Could you pick something or
the most?
Or if you're looking at, you know, the voiceovers, the Broadway credits, the regional theater credits, you know, the coaching, all of it.
Yeah.
And more.
Yeah.
What about all of that, or could you pick one that's been the most fulfilling for you as an artist?
Probably, you know, one of the most fulfilling on the performing side that I talk about was it wasn't even a full show. It was a Gypsy of the Year opening number when we paid tribute to the original cast of West Side Story. Playing Riff in West Side was a big part of my career in my 20s. I played it about five times in five, yeah, it's crazy, in many different companies. And we got to do it as the opening number. That was with the originals. That left an impression on me that, like, it doesn't matter what kind of lead role you have in a show. That was just an amazing, and people that I've just, you know, Cheetah Rivera, Mickey Collin, Ken Leroy, you know, it was amazing. But I don't know if I have the fave. That's hard. But they all like intercept. You know, I mean, when a student of mine calls me and says, Leo, I got in.
It feels like you got in.
Yeah, I do. And I remember when I got my call from Carnegie Mellon from the voice teacher saying, Leo, we just want to let you know you've been accepted. I mean, you don't ever forget those words. So that's a beautiful thing. The voiceovers, kind of like today, in the sense that I have the two of you sitting across from me. The interesting thing about voiceovers, it's personal. So you don't share a voiceover with friends and family the way that, you know, you do a stage performance with a live audience, or coaching, of course, is extremely personal because it's like one-on-one consulting, you know. But the voiceover stuff, it's almost like you're with yourself, you know, in a booth, in a microphone. So it's a different kind of high. It's very weird. It's very weird.
Well, how did you get started in voiceovers?
All right, now that's a good question. You know what? First of all, I'll go back to school. My teachers used to really get upset about this voice that I have because they'd say, Leo, are you smoking? Leo, do you have nodules? Leo, there's something wrong with your voice. It's so raspy. It's so low. And I'd say, I don't smoke. I don't have anything. Well, I'm singing. What do you mean? Why would you say I have nodules? Like, and I would fight it, and they would fight me. I got tested. I didn't have any kind of vocal hemorrhage or problems. Long story short, when I got to New York, I tried to get into the voiceover world and I wasn't successful. People used to say your voice is perfect for it. Then all of a sudden, one day I was doing a coaching on an accent, a German accent that I had to do for a new play that I was in, a reading. And I contacted my friend Sue Serretta, who was a senior at Carnegie Mellon when I was a freshman, and she does a lot of coaching. at the end of the coaching for this play, she said, "Leo, are you doing voiceovers?" And I said, "Oh God, I'm trying. I can't break into it." And she said, "Well, I'll introduce you to my agent." And I thought, "All right, well, this is just like one of those friends helping a friend thing. Nothing's gonna, you know, materialize." And I met with them. They said, "You sound great. We'll send you out right away." Even then, I still thought, "Nah, they're just doing that because they know Sue, you know." And then they did, and I booked one of my first auditions. So I definitely had luck in my favor, or I guess some people don't believe in the luck thing, but the stars aligned at the right time that I was able to get that job early on. And then, of course, I'm so thankful to Innovative, my voiceover and commercial agents, and they've taken me down in such an exciting path. I just did one for Goldman Sachs the other day, which was really fun.
Are there ways that you prepare for a voiceover that would maybe differ from a live performance? Yeah. I mean, you mean you're like using your voice, but it's a different...
Very different. Yeah. You're aware of every single sound. So like if I was saying like, "How are you?" I could just say, "How are you?" like I did. Or if I put a little bit more color and texture, "How are you?" And I use Fry. It's called like a Fry tone in your voice. My first voiceover was Sharp TV. And at the end, when I kept saying "only from Sharp," they always wanted "only from Sharp, Sharp, Sharp." Wow. They wanted like a Fry. They wanted just a Fry with my voice because it feels...
Well, hopefully this sounds really good on these microphones.
I do too. I'm sure it does. But like they wanted that because they thought it sounded like natural conversational man. As opposed to like "only from Sharp," like a supported sound. So it's what I do in voiceovers is the opposite of what I usually book for stage. Like a lot of times for stage, I book like I support myself. But like it's funny, I have like a lot of characters I've played, either really edgy people, energetic, animated, passionate, like, you know, upbeat, all of that stuff, which is very much me. I don't usually do roles that are like, "Hey man, what's up?" Like the laid back, chill, like stoner guy. Like I don't usually play those roles. But in voiceovers, that's mainly what I go in for, is like chill, laid back, raspy, cool.
Like, that's got to be so freeing for you as an artist and as a performer, because like you said, you don't get typecast as those types of roles.
No, you're right.
So that's really interesting.
It is interesting. And I didn't even realize it for a couple of years. And
you're taking the image completely out.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do people see, or what do people hear?
Yeah. What do they hear? Right. Yep. And I wonder that sometimes, like when I walk in for the booking, are the producers who only have heard my voice, are you, you know, do you go, "Oh, that's what he looks like"?
Yeah.
You know, that's happened where they look at me, they go, "Oh, hi, Leo." Like maybe they pictured I'm older, or maybe they're not aware, like, "Whoa, he's got like big messy blonde hair." Like I don't know what they think, but that happens, because like you're right, the voiceovers, it's just what you sound like. But I do prepare. I didn't really answer your question, did I? I do prepare differently, in the sense of I really pop out operative words, you know, what am I selling. Some stuff is the same as performing. Who am I talking to? You know, so your audience. So if I'm talking to like two people conducting a podcast interview, that's different than the way I talk to like my best friend or my mom. So that's how you get different reads. If you change the person you're talking to, it'll change your tonality.
Well, how do you balance all of this on top of your coaching?
Yeah. Well,
because, right? You know, when you're in a show, especially, you have a show schedule.
Yeah.
And then do you fill your day with coaching sessions and voiceover sessions and auditions?
Yes. I know the time frames of these things. So fortunately with MTCA, I'm at such a place now as a director of the team and owner of the team that I can shape the day also to what helps me. So a lot of initial consultations that I do when I'm meeting new students and families will happen in the early evening, the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock range, so it doesn't conflict with auditions that I have in the morning and the afternoon. Or a lot of times I do MTCA work on the weekends. Like I just had work, you know, before I came up here today, because it's a weekend, you know, and Sunday too. So it's just about the balance. And you know auditions are going to generally happen 10 to 6. I'm a morning person, so sometimes I do work on my own with emails like 8 to 9, 9 to 10. But it's really hard. I mean, there's always the shuffle of like, you know, what the MTCA now is busy all the time. We work with so many juniors right after we turn over our seniors. So it's kind of a yearly long commitment, for sure.
Well, how do you consult with a student that's looking into going to a university? How do you... Yeah. Figure out what's best for them, and does your experience going to Carnegie Mellon shape how you treat the students and their needs.
Yes, for sure. I mean, my biggest goal is that they're not following some kind of code or structure of where they're supposed to go, or because a school has a large name, therefore they should apply and audition. My goal is to learn as much about them as an individual and their wants and what they're dreaming, that then I can help supply and build a school list to support their dreams. And also to speak to the reality of how competitive it is. When I was doing this in 1998, it was 6-7 schools that everyone auditioned for, if that. Now, if you audition for 6 schools, it's like playing with serious fire, especially if some of those schools are schools like Carnegie Mellon that accept such a small percentage of their applicants. So it's the reality talk, but it's also exciting to share with them my path, because I'm one of those people that got into one of those huge schools. So when I was at my audition and I heard them say, you know, less than 2% of our applicants get accepted here, I turned to my mom and I said, Mom, this is ridiculous. Why are we here? I'm not going to get in. And she kind of looked at me and took a breath and said, well, Leo, someone's going to get in. Why can't it be you? And in that moment, I wanted to go, all right, Mom, that's annoying. Be quiet. Like, that's what I wanted to say.
That's serious advice.
Yeah. And so I tell the kids that all the time. I say, listen, guys, it happened to me. I didn't have more training than you. I wasn't different than you. I wanted it just like you did. So I never take away the dream of those big schools. But now in 2019, it's also about the protection of your list. You can't walk into not realizing the game, what the structure is. Yeah.
So still talking with MTCA and the coaching, because that's kind of how I got into like the professional world, was the college auditioning and the coaching of students. And we met on Broadway Student Summit, which is how I know Brian.
Right.
Which is how I know Leah. Nice triangle.
Yes.
Theater education has always been a huge part of my adult life.
Right.
Because my theater program in high school was very motivational for me, I think, and I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
So do you pull from your high school experience even, or like how do you, I guess?
It's funny because high school for me, I grew up in an area, it was about 40 minutes north of Pittsburgh, that had a really good professional theater company, Pittsburgh Musical Theater, where I got to have my start in professional theater. So I didn't always do the high school play or musical. I had exposure, but those are formative years. I mean, certainly I do remember them, you know, fondly. I mean, I remember thinking, I got to get out of here. It's time to be a theater major, you know. But I'm a believer in, you know, high school, college, those years are such formative years, regardless of where you're going and what you're majoring in. It's development. You're not who you are yet. I mean, are we ever? But, you know,
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Another podcast. No, but who are we? But you know what I mean? Like in high school and college, everything is so in the future that then when you have that supported foundation of a school that you're passionate about, high school and then college. So like when people have like bad high school years, that breaks my heart, because you don't get those years back, you know, and then that changes the forecast for your next 4 or 8.
Have you ever worked with a student that thinks that they want to go to college and maybe you have different
views on
their decision?
Yes. Sometimes people are a little delusional about, you know, where they are with their skill set. Mm-hmm. So it is a hard conversation to have when I have to say, listen, you're at a more green place. It's not to say that you can't grow and become more competitive, but
that's what we're going to school for.
Yeah, that's right? Exactly. Yeah. Why would you be going to school if you had all the answers? Right. That's exactly right. But it is hard when I have to kind of reshape a list and say, I think you need more newer programs on your list too. Not only these big guns that have been around, you know, since the dawn of time, but have some reality. Still, you can still audition for some of these dream schools. Hey, you never know what can happen. I mean, that is the interesting part of the arts that I love, is that there's no black and white formula. There's no code. There's no guarantees. It's so much is subjective. So much is arbitrary. So I don't work at those schools. That's not fair for me to say, well, you're not good enough to get to the... I can talk about a skill set, you know, grade or realization or assessment, that's the best word to use, an assessment of where someone is. But like students have really shown me over the years that when I say, if you work your butt off, like, what are you going to do every single day? And they do. And then some don't. So then the ones that don't have to hear that talk again, you know, in 2 months, 3 months. But what is changing that I see earlier on is these students earlier on in high school and even in middle school understand how competitive this is. So they are fueled in a way to just, you know, keep doing the work.
Do you think that college is right for everyone? for on the performing aspect at least, because there are, I've heard people say it might not be right for you,
right?
Because they know that individual.
Yeah.
But here are all these classes. I mean, there are tons of places in New York alone that offer training programs.
They do.
You know, you can do the coaching, the private lessons.
I think you have to recognize that it is not the same thing. It's not a replacement for college. I mean, there is something very beautiful and secure and safe in a four-year program because of what naturally happens with development over 4 years that you cannot squeeze into two. Or if you're just taking individual professional classes in New York City, which I do not judge, I've taken them, that's very different in the sense that it can't replace what you would get in a four-year program. The biggest thing is it's not about the teachers or the classes, it's your classmates. That's what I'm really passionate about, that especially in an intimate class size, you're learning as much from each other as your peers as you are from your teacher. So I don't think school's for everyone. Certainly, financially speaking, it isn't for everyone, and it gets more and more expensive, which is terrible, but it is what it is. It's, you know, school's a business. I always tell my families that I work with. I work with just as much many parents as the students. The students I'm working to, you know, get into college, the parents are paying for it, you know. So I often say
that. Part of your business.
It's part of my business, right? So, you know, it isn't for everybody, and there are people that I always use the analogy like, yes, could you take a bus to New York, get off, go to a Broadway show and get in? Yeah, we know those people. I have friends like that. But then to sustain a career, I do think it's that much more difficult. It's not that you can't do it, but to not have the foundation of training and not have answers of what to turn to when you book the job. You know, a lot of people booking work is one thing, sustaining it 8 shows a week and having the discipline and the foundation and the training, that is quite another conversation of how many people have that. And I've had a lot of friends struggle with how to sustain playing a role 8 shows a week, for sure. I mean, we all have our hiccups along the way, but when you have training, you know what to do on the bad day. You know what to do when you get an audition and the sides aren't written very well. You know what to do if you have technique. It isn't. That's the part of acting that isn't a made-up thing.
It's
like
the analysis textbook part of it.
Yeah.
That you can go in.
Yeah, there is a breakdown and the right series of questions, and text work is a real thing. So there are, you know, when people were like, oh, this actor schmactor stuff where they're all, you know, dancing and moving all around. I mean, to some degree, yes, all of these conservatories and liberal arts schools, they will have classes that you're like, really? Like, am I really taking that? But then there are times where you learn, oh, wow. And you don't even realize it when it's happening. It's after years.
Need to employ it.
Yeah. One of my least favorite classes was voice and speech. That is hands down the most important class I ever took. Because now as an actor, for all those reasons I talked about, and then some, there's so much stuff that I technically learned, but then at 19 or 18, 16, you don't know yet. You're not a professional yet. You know, so that's where are you getting all of that when you do these individual classes? Yes, no. And if you are taking that class, are you taking that class for 4 years straight every single day or 2 days a week? That's the hard part. That's why I'm so passionate about when you can find a program to support you. My big thing is that now what's exciting is there are so many excellent programs with so many excellent teachers that it doesn't need to be those 6-7 only that you go for. It's just not true anymore. Yeah.
Do you have a particular routine when you prepare for a show that you're working on?
Yes.
When you book the role?
Yep. For me, the best warm-up first is physical. That really just gets my blood flowing. So certainly when I've done the more physical dance shows, when I've done Riff in West Side, Billy Lawler in 42nd Street. I played Will Parker in, you know, Oklahoma. And even like when I was doing Shuffle Along, I was the standby for Brooks Ashmanskas in that show. And then I took over the role the last 2 weeks. That was really hard because I hadn't been playing the role. So I had to kind of every now and then create a warm up that then when I was playing it, I could sustain what that high pace thing was. So you have to always look ahead and know, what am I going to be doing when I'm actually playing the role? And then what is going to help prepare me for it, literally from a stretching standpoint, but then to mentally get behind roles too. So there's like three kinds of warm-up. There's the physical warm-up, there's the literal vocal warm-up, which of course you got to do, and then mentally warming up, or mentally cooling down. It's really hard too. Like, you know, West Side Story, man, that's rough. I mean, dying, and then you come back like for the curtain call, you feel the power of the show. There were times where I was like, this is heavy. I've gotten good at leaving it at the door, but it's hard. I don't always do that.
Well, I also think it's something that takes time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So someone even coming out of, an actor coming out of like a college program, mm-hmm. and then jumping into that.
Yeah, that's right.
Like I'm sure your first West Side Story experience, yeah. how did you...
It was hard. Yeah, I didn't get it. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be really... This is in depth. Like, it isn't just those songs I learned and the dance steps that I'm like, you know, executing. This is... There's layers to it, for sure. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's... You know, I hate saying this, but there is so much to learn from doing. It is true that you really will learn as you go. But again, like if you said, gosh, Leo, like playing riff, that wasn't like a fluke. There were also productions I had auditioned for first that I didn't book riff. And I had played Action in college at a small summer stock. And I had played Arab in Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh Musical Theater. So there were times where like I was building up to it. As well, like my favorite role to date is the MC in Cabaret.
That's such a great role for you.
It's my favorite, and I'm sure I'll do it again someday too. I would
Where
want
did you
to
do it.
I did it first in Houston at Houston Tuts Theater Under the Stars, and then I did it in Denver at the Arvada Center. Both very different. Houston Tuts was like over 2,000 seats, I think, or close to 1,800 yeah. something. No, I think it's over 2. Anyway, and then Arvada was like 700. So one was a much more extravagant kind of large scale, the other was more intimate. Yeah. But when I booked that, I used to always say part of what led to me booking that was shows like Riff, shows where I learned about like myself being in my body, that then I could up it even more for a bigger role like the MC. You know, everything is linked that we do. So even when it's a different show, nothing's really like separated. I always feel that.
What do you feel that you learn from your students as a coach? That you could take back to your acting work?
Ooh, they're going to love this when they get to hear this answer. They're going to hold it over my head. No. What do I learn from them? Their innocence. Their willingness to, you know, not have the answer and to still go for it with all of their, you know, lust and desire. And that's a beautiful thing. Not to say that I've lost it, but I'm older now. You know, I'm in my upper 30s now. I see, you know, I've experienced more loss in my life and death and breakups and, you know, harder days. I lost a really good friend 2 years ago. So when you're young, you haven't experienced life as much. So it's easier to have that innocence. So I learned that from them a lot. They remind me of it. And they really do inspire me that I see the work that they do and they get that much better. Well, then we all can. I mean, when you really put in the time. And they do. I mean, some don't, but most do. And the ones that do are they succeed with flying colors. I mean, it's really awesome to see and view.
So coaching to me is very similar to directing. Would you consider yourself a director in a sense or have any interest in directing? In the future,
I know that I have the skill set characteristically in my personality to be good at it because I care about so many parts of the cohesive whole of theater. I mean, that's my favorite thing about musical theater is I've done those shows where like five of the six areas are really good, but there's that one thing, and then like that can be the death of a show.
You notice that,
and I notice it, and yeah. I know that good directors are aware of all of the pieces in the puzzle. With that said, no, I don't think about it a lot. I don't see it the way that I'll see things. Like I'll see like the fantasy of, you know, getting to like bow as an original principal in a show. Like I got to take over in Shuffle, but I still have that dream to like originate a principal role. You know, or like I've seen the fantasy of winning a Tony. Like I've seen that. I see that in my like fantasy brain. But I don't fantasize the director thing. Like could I direct a production of West Side? Yes, I could. Because I know it inside and out. Yeah. I know what's important to me. I've seen the West Sides that
you know
I don't
the mechanics,
like.
Yeah.
I know the mechanics, yeah. But no, I don't know if I'll evolve into it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because a friend and former teacher of mine, she's a really awesome coach. Mm-hmm. And she coaches a lot of productions and coaches on the side and stuff.
Yeah.
And when I asked her, I said, do you want to be a director? Or would you think would it tickle you to be a director? And she said, no, because I don't think, you know, having the whole cohesiveness of the script and everything and the whole production, she doesn't have that vision for the picture.
Yeah.
She could just get the technique and help the actors get their technique and motivation and objectives and all that.
I also like
black and white
stuff. No, that makes sense. I like too being, you know, as an actor and watching like a music director do their thing or a choreographer do their thing. There's something just special when you're one of the pieces in that big collective whole. It's awesome. That's what I love about theater. It is the best part of it is what you collaboratively do with each other. Like School of Rock, I was I had no idea how.
Were you in the original company?
No.
Did you go after Shuffle?
Yeah, it was after Shuffle. It was about a year after I joined in May of 2017. Oh, it was right around now, actually. Yeah, I just didn't even realize that. The little reunion of time. But it's actually, and today I made my Broadway debut in Superstar.
Oh.
About 7 years ago today. Yeah. I just put that in my story. I was like,
hey, congratulations.
Thank you. I know it's a good day to do this.
But a lot of good things are happening on this day.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But I was a replacement. I was a vacation swing in the show. So I went in and out of School of Rock a lot. I would do 2 weeks, 3 months, 2 months, 3 weeks, all that. But the fulfillment you had bowing in that show, where you could just feel we took this audience on this joyride, and they would just be going nuts. I mean, I just didn't see that coming when I booked the show. Like, I thought, cool, this is going to be fun. It's another Weber show.
Another job of working with kids.
Working with kids.
Working with youth.
It's so true. I work with so many kids. And it's funny. I call my teenagers that I coach kids a lot. And I'm like, they're not kids. They're teens, Leo.
These were kids.
Very talented
kids. Oh, so talented.
I saw that show a few times, and every time I was just blown away. I was like, I'm missing something.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll tell you a quick story. At the top of the Winter Garden stairs, and there's a lot going up to the dressing room, I had taken one of those breaks of 2-3 months, and I was back for the first time, and I was signing in at the call board, and all of a sudden I hear Troy. Troy was, I shouldn't say, I didn't have favorites, but he was one of my favorites. I don't think he'll hear this. Maybe he will. Hey, Troy. Yeah. But he literally went, Leo, you're back. Aww. And he took like 3 steps down and lunged like a trust fall. But instead of going backwards, he just lunged at me, like just assuming I'd catch him. And I did. And I was like, Troy. And he's squeezing me so hard. And it's not fake. Like, he's really that happy to see me. Nope. Professional actors hug you like that. I mean, it was the most beautiful moment. I'll never. It's literally one of my school. Audrey will go, oh, prick a leg. No, she does. Her hug. She doesn't. She actually does hold a hand really strong. My very first
Something
show.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. My first show on in Shuffle, we always would circle up at the top of the show, and Billy Porter said some really nice things about me because he had known me from before, and I happened to be in the circle next to Audra, Pittsburgh, right? We were, and I happened to be holding Audra's hand. And as he was saying things, she kept squeezing my hand. You know? Yeah, I know. It's like, that's Audra McDonald. I know. I just saw her in Frankie and Johnny.
Yeah.
So good. But yeah, you know, I contacted her after. I was like, you're amazing in the show. And my friend said to me, he's like, you contacted Audra? And I said, yes, I worked with her. What do you mean, did I contact her? You know? Yeah, it was funny.
Good moment.
Yeah, it was fun. It was amazing.
So working with kids in School of Rock,
yes.
Would you say that it helps working with kids in MTCA?
Because
there are different levels.
They're so different.
I mean, they're in...
They're so
I'm
much
sure
younger.
They're in different levels of their age.
Yes, they were anywhere from like career. 9 to like 13, 12, 13. But some of them, the 12, 13-year-olds knew of my MTCA work. So they're like, oh my gosh, when we apply for college, we're going to come work with you.
Are they future clients?
I don't doubt it. Actually, for the first time ever, clients, I did Mary Poppins in 2014. I played Bert. And it was out at Westchester.
That's so fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It's a hard show. It was more hard than I was thinking. But anyway, two of the baby we had, the kids were double cast. The young Janes were both, one of them I coached last year and one of them now is this year. So the students that I've even worked with or kids that I worked with are
That's
then
so cool.
becoming students I coach. Yeah. Yeah. And well, what imagine my disbelief of the kids that, see there, I did it again, the teens that I coached into college, went through 4 years of college and now they're booking work here in New York City.
And I mean, maybe you'll be working with them soon.
I keep saying, who is going to be the
first? Have you yet?
No.
Oh, okay.
There was a little song cycle I did once with Carrie George. She was a student that she went to Pace MT. But that wasn't like a full production. I mean, like production. It hasn't happened yet.
Wow.
Yep. I wonder who's going to be the first. It almost happened in SpongeBob. I had like a final callback prepared for that. And then I booked Shuffle. So I took myself out of SpongeBob when I booked Shuffle, and one of my students was in the final callback with me. We were dancing together.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really crazy.
Probably very full circle for you.
Totally full. Oh,
he was
helping me.
Putting...
Well, you know what was happening? They were asking for like tricks and stuff, and they're like, who skateboards? And who roller skates? And I was like, not me. And then they were like, well, even the people who can't, like, why don't you try it?
Try.
And I was like, great. Exactly. I was like, this is it. I'm breaking my... No, that is exactly...
I just got back from LA, and everybody skateboards and longboards and everything, and I was like...
Oh my god.
And someone was like, well, you should just try. Like, just try.
Oh,
and I was working at a library. and there were kids on ripsticks.
Yeah. I don't even know what a ripstick is.
So a ripstick is kind of like a skateboard, but it kind of has a middle part that it's so hard. Look it up, people.
Ripstick.
Ripstick. Okay, so I'm gonna show the visual.
So you can rip
your neck. So it kinda, your feet go like this. I'm making a visual.
In a certain shoe?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're on the board and you're kind of alternating your feet going back and forth and shifting back and forth. And someone was like, one of the kids while I was working, he was like, you should try it. Just get on. I'm like, I would break my neck. I really would.
Well, and that's kind of what I was doing. I was like, all right, I'll get on this, but I'm going to look like grandpa, like gramps up on this like scooter. But my student helped me. Yeah, Logan. He was like, all right, this is what you do. And I was like, look at this full circle moment. Nice. Yeah.
Paying it forward.
Oh, yeah. Paying it forward big time.
We love stage mishaps on this podcast. Do you have any really good stories to tell us?
Well, when I was, this pertains to being really young. When it was a summer program, like a summer camp kind of thing, and we were doing cats, which I don't like cats.
I could tell just by the way
you
said
it. I don't like it. What is going on?
A bunch of people. I mean, that's a big part of your career.
I love Weber. I just don't get this. I mean, with the unitards and the dressing up and like licking your hands. I don't know. All right.
And the fake fur.
Yeah, the fake stuff. And this like anything. It's like, which cat goes to heaven? I don't care about any of those cats. No. Okay. Anyway. I do.
I've never seen it, by the way, so I have no idea what
it's just
the
weird.
Story
it's weird. Cats is weird. Yeah. People love cats. People love. Okay. Oh, yeah. So I was McCavity. I was a couple cats, but I was doing the number McCavity, and I was climbing up a platform where I put like one foot. The stairs were really narrow, so you couldn't put your whole foot down on each stair.
Paw.
Thank you. My mom. Thank you. Thank you very much. Paw. My paw. And it would go up the stairs, right? And I lost my balance. I fell over the back and went down like 6 feet. And like, my hands went on the scrim. It was like I was scratching like a cat through the scrim.
I'm assuming you didn't have cat-like reflexes when you fell.
Basically. And that's the part of the show where, if you know the song they're singing, McCavity's not there. And I wasn't. Like, I was on the floor and there was like a thud, and then I kind of like checked my body, like, okay, good. You didn't break anything. And I got off stage and literally they were all there going, Leo, are you okay? And I looked at them and I was like, yeah, I thought I broke a bone, but I just slipped. And then they started laughing. Like, it was like, oh good, he's okay. Now we can tease him. You know, it was crazy. That was a pretty good one.
So, on the topic of mishaps,
yeah,
have you ever had a conversation with any of your students about mishaps and how to kind of bounce back or recover or how to push through?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is not to call more attention to it and like apologize for it. It happened. It's a real moment. So if it's in an audition, that can be like the best part of the audition, because it can be like a humanizing moment for you and the creative team. But if you're in a show and it happens, I mean, you know, it's just, you got to like make the best and keep going forward. You learn. It is that kind of reminder of like, are you in the moment? I mean, good acting, we know, is like real. You're in it. So not like this put on thing. So I think it can kind of test you in a weird way. You can kind of gain and learn a lot from it if something happens. But like, you know, I've never had one of those things where like I, knock on wood, missed an entrance. That's never happened to me yet. Not that I can think of. I feel like I would remember if I did that.
What would happen?
Shows have like gone on. Like I was in a show once where it happened. I was doing Peter and the Starcatcher. I got to play Black Stash, which I loved.
Oh, wow.
And someone didn't come on, and we started improvising. We just started all going,
which,
well,
I guess for that show.
That's a pretty interesting
show.
Which is already
I'm doing a lot of in that trunk scene. But it was pretty crazy. You just kind of like play. You know, you kind of improvise. I mean, talk about real. You know, it's real. Yeah.
We're sure our listeners would love to know, for anyone who's either coming out of college or considering college or not.
Yeah.
What is a piece of advice that you received at any point in your career, whether it was earlier on or even yesterday, that you could share with our
audience? When I was at Carnegie Mellon, Jordan Thaler, who is still a great casting director at The Public, he came and did a masterclass with all of the senior MTs. And I'll never forget him saying, guys, when you get to New York City and you have a rough day, make sure that you have something outside of theater that you love to do, or have your outlet. Now, when you're like a senior in college, you're thinking, oh no, I'm going to, you know, be on Broadway. You know, you don't really absorb it. But I remember when I had like a really shitty, can I say that on the podcast?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Shitty. When I had like a shitty day and a callback didn't happen and my first audition was awful and I felt like, you know, just like terrible. And I remembered thinking what Jordan said. Oh yeah, that's what he meant. Like, have that outlet. So like, one of my loves in my life is my, I have a big green thumb, tons of houseplants, like 30 houseplants in my apartment. Everyone knows, like, now I'm starting to, I always call myself Green Leo, hashtag Green Leo. So like, I like the plant man. I have all these nicknames now. Man.
His shirt right now has green leaves. On it.
There's lots of leaves. I just love nature.
It's on brand.
It's on brand. It's on brand.
I think I have a single. Don't look behind you.
Oh, don't look. Oh, is it dying? Is it plastic? No plastic.
No, it's not plastic.
Everyone listening to this podcast, I will never help you. If I come to your apartment and do a coaching or you ask me and I see plastic, I will walk out.
Run away. I actually...
There's no plastic here.
Oh, but I see Kit Kats.
You can have one.
All right, I'll try to get one later.
I'm so bad. I killed a succulent.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to know how? No, this is beyond... No, I overwatered it because I thought it was dying because it was. Do you want to know where I put it? So I used to have my dresser in my closet, which had no sunlight and succulents.
Yeah.
I used to lots of sunlight and little water.
Yeah.
So I saw that it started to die and I said, oh no, why is it dying? I started giving it so much water and it really died.
It was rotting. Yeah.
It was rotting.
Yeah. That's the number one thing people do is that they pay so much attention to a plant that they think it needs water constantly, you will rot the leaves or the roots. But that's my advice, is find something you love to do that is not related to theater. So then you have that outlet. So you can put your energy positively into something that, you know, gives back. I also receive really good advice from Priscilla Lopez, who I worked with on a premiere play somewhere. It was out at the Globe, which was amazing. This was back in 11. And we were all having like an awesome theater conversation about, you know, it was like at the end of the first week of rehearsal and she took us out and we were all having a glass of red wine. It was amazing. Everyone's like huddled around like, what's Priscilla going to say next? You know, it was amazing. And I'll never forget when she said, listen, guys, you can have a good day or week or month. I'm paraphrasing this, not verbatim, but, you know, just remember that for as much love as you put into show business, it never gives back everything you put in. Mm. Meaning... the way I took it was that no matter how much I love it and I put into it, it's not going to give back like a person gives back, or, you know, it's show business, you know. So you can have those amazing weeks or months or years, but it doesn't, you, for all of the blood, sweat and tears that you have to put in order to be successful, it doesn't mean that you feel it back tenfold. I mean, it was kind of a realistic, it wasn't sad when she said it, it just was kind of realistic.
It can almost be applied to a lot of different jobs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that it is a job. I think that's the thing, is that we start doing this because, oh my God, I love it so much. But like, you quickly learn, to all those recent graduates or about to be graduates, you'll start to learn fast how much, you know. I remember Nick Wyman in one of our president, who used to be our president at Equity, had a whole thing called, in the newsletter, it's not called show craft, it's called show business. And that business part of it can be dark. I mean, dark. Like, I've seen ugly, ugly things happen in an array of ways. And you got to know on those dark days, what the hell are you going to do? Where is your outlet? Even if it's just like that person in your life that you know you can just be completely real with or whatever. But you got to have... If you're putting all of your eggs into the theater bat, it will catch up to you.
Is there something in the business that if you had the power to change, that you would really, really change?
Oh, God. It's like, it's that hard thing where it's like the things that, you know, the bittersweet things are, you know, the hard things are what makes you better too. But what would I change? I guess, you know, communication always seems to be difficult in the arts, in the sense that, you know, there's a lot of blind trust sometimes between, you know, actors and representation, or representation and casting directors. There's a lot of times where, if like I haven't been a part of a project moving forward, all of a sudden like there's no communication to me. Like, things like that drive me nuts, because it feels personal, I think, for somebody, when ultimately I know what this is and I know that it doesn't always go your way. So sometimes I wish communication lines were better. You know, like in theater, we can do an audition and, you know, we never hear from people. Like, that's just the way it goes. You don't get to, you know, it's not like another job where you sit down for an interview. If you don't get it, you still hear from them. So you have to develop that thick skin to know, how am I going to persevere and persist and keep going with that same passion I had before, knowing that I don't have that interaction. That's different than other businesses and crafts, you know? So I guess that would be the part of it. For me personally, it's never been the unemployment, because I enjoy not knowing what's next. I almost enjoy it in like, oh, I wonder what's next, because I'm confident that the next one will be there. So it's not that. I know a lot of people would probably say that, the inconsistencies of up and down. But I think mine is just like within the infrastructure of it all.
Yeah.
Communication. Yeah.
And do you think because you have other things like the voiceovers and the coaching that
I'm confident.
Give you that through line?
No question.
Yeah.
No question that because I have those other areas, if one of the three isn't as great, you know, 2 years ago, I had a bigger voiceover year than I did last year. You know, it just was the way it was. And the gigs that I booked either ran commercially on TV or didn't, you know. And, you know, just like this year, I'm starting off this year, School of Rock closed at the end of February. You know, now I don't have my next Broadway gig yet. I'm not worried in any kind of way, but I likely will fulfill more of 19 without Broadway weeks than I did in 18.
Is there anything in the future or any goals you have moving forward through the end of this year or even for 2020?
Yeah, you know, a lot of my goals at the moment, I mean, certainly, yes, I have my eye on theater all the time and projects that I've heard about or people saying to me, Leo, you're really great for that, where I'll check in with my agents and I'll talk to them. The thing that's on my horizon right now more than anything is something I haven't talked about today, and that is buying an apartment. It's actually been something I've been so passionate about doing for about 4 to 5 years, but was delusional myself in not recognizing you're not putting in the time to do it, Leo. Mm. So as soon as School of Rock closed, I realized, Leo, there's a window. If you don't make use of this window right now, you know you will fill that time with something else. So it will not happen on its own. I've kind of coached myself more aggressively. I also have an amazing friend, Joel Wagner, who did a very gutsy thing where he contacted a broker without my permission and basically set up a phone conversation. And it was a very gutsy thing, but it turned out to be amazing because now I have this great relationship with this broker. But as far as goals go, if someone says, what's your goal? I can't wait to have my next home that's bigger, has an outdoor space for all my plants. I want to have a dinner table for dinner parties.
In the city?
In the city. I don't want to, as much as I would love the bigger space outside, I'm too much of a city boy. I do too much on a daily basis. I think that commute over time, and I'm single. So I think being single and living out there might be tough.
Yeah.
I think so.
So we like to end all of our podcast episodes with one question.
Okay.
What was the last great thing that you've seen, piece of theater?
Oh, the last great thing I saw. Well, Frankie and Johnny I saw. I thought there was amazing work
What spoke to you?
The vulnerability of love. You know, a lot of that play, Terrence McNally's play, is, you know, if they experience love and they lost it, or if they experience pain in their past, how do you kind of step into your new body? How do you step into your next chapter? You know, so they both have a lot of pain. So the conflict of love and pain was kind of what I take from that play the most, and I love that.
Well, thank you so much for hanging out in my living room.
This is so much fun. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it.
Awesome time.
Yes. Me too. Me too. And thank you for the Bloody Mary.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. So we're going to drink some more.
Yes. Yes. I love it.
And your shot glass of olives.
And my shot glass.
I wasn't sure if he liked olives, so I just gave him a whole shot glass.
I hope they didn't hear me, but I was picking at them.
Well, if you don't know, now you know. So
now
you
know.
Hear it.
Yeah. You get olives here.
Yeah. Listen back. Well, bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
And if you're enjoying these conversations, we would really appreciate it if you could take a couple minutes to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.